Hey, hey, it's Shop Talk Show. Boop, boop, beep, doop, boop, doop, boop. With Dave Rupert. Boop, boop, beep, doop, boop, doop, boop. And Chris Coyer.
Were you Fat Albert, Dave?
I don't know. Happy Halloween. Whatever month it is. Hey, so we're back. What a fun time we're having. We're learning about GitHubs and Gits and all things. And I don't know, Chris, how's things on your end?
GitHubs? What do you mean? Oh, is it, were you watching GitHub Universe or something? Or were you doing some Git work?
Well, I was dang-itting my Git.
Oh, with Katie last week. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah, but anyway, how's things over in your land?
Okay. My back is better than yours at the moment. Sorry about that.
So I'm having major health problems. So everyone loves to talk about health problems, but my back went out, and it's been out for about 2.5 months now, and I'm finally, like, I went to the chiropractor. That didn't do anything. Took a bunch of ibuprofen. That didn't do anything. Got a massage. That didn't do anything. I was about to do acupuncture, and then was finally like, I'm just going to go to like classic physical therapy, you know, went to the doctors, had x-rays, all that, like,
Man,
just to make sure. Yeah. I mean, it's like bad enough. And so I went to, and now I'm doing physical therapy and stuff like that. And so it's pretty intense. But you know, most of it's like, here, lay on this ball. Like, it's like, okay, cool. I'll do that. But it's from sitting, it's from working, and there's stress involved too. Like my shoulders and back all clench up, you know, but like it's from working, like how I sit is like pulling on my sciatic, and which is causing my back to compensate, which is just wrecking me. So now I'm trying to get back into life, and I'm doing things like I'm trying to stand up during meetings. I have this standing desk, so I should stand up during meetings, but it's at the point where it's like sitting hurts, standing hurts, and laying down hurts. So what are your options?
Oh my gosh. Space. Live in a
pool?
Maybe.
Can I live in a pool? So that's sort of where I'm at. And it's not fun. It has me thinking, and I'd love it. Like, people can reach out to me over DMs or whatever, but like, I'm finding working with like chronic pain is difficult, and maybe that's some like privilege I'm acknowledging that I haven't had this problem before, or really I haven't had it until like acutely until now. But like you know that idea of like long sustained developer tasks, like you can't interrupt a developer because they're a special superhuman who needs like a bunch of focus. I don't like necessarily believe like the otherism of these like developers can't be interrupted, you know, like we're not superhuman, but like it does take a lot of brain power to like do a development task, I feel like. And if you're interrupted, I think it does have a consequence to getting back into things. But what, you know, it has me thinking about like what happens when your body is the interrupter, you know, when that's the mechanism that's like, hey, you can't do this anymore, you know, like,
That's, I mean, I've had it in small ways, tough. Not with my back, but like RSI can do that for you, where you all of a sudden you have it and it hurts constantly, and you're like, your life flashes before your eyes, not because your fingers hurt a little bit, because that's like, yeah, you're like, I, you know, whatever, it's just my finger, it's not like the worst pain in the world, but then you're like, but it might mean that my entire career is over, because if I can't type, I'm done. You know, I mean, sure, there's all kinds of interesting things. You could use dragon dictation and teach your code with your mouth, but you're like, you know, that you won't actually do that. You know, that's like 1 in 1,000 people that actually like pivot in that serious of a way.
Yeah. 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 It's hard. You just kind of sit there. You're like, what are my options here? But for me, it's like even just like a satisfaction thing, right? Like, if I can only do like short tasks, like, will I ever like accomplish anything of size or value? You know, that's really hard to think about, you know? So anyway, I'm learning how this all works. Right. Like, and just like, I don't know, I'm just now like starting to be like, okay, life's maybe different here. I probably have to take breaks every few hours and stretch and, you know, do all this stuff. And so,
yeah, hopefully small changes can fix it for you. And it doesn't have to be a massive change, but who knows? Maybe it does have to be a massive change.
Well, that's the thing with backs and stuff like that. That's like, surgery is the last thing you want to do really for a back. So,
right.
But it could even just be like, you know, I don't even know. I don't know. So,
you know, there's a
squats.
I was just, you know, cause not when you tell somebody else is talking about their back, you're like, how's my back? You know, I'm like feeling it. Like, do I feel strong? Huh? You know, on the opposite side of the coin here, not to like, maybe to take your mind off it for a second, this occurred to me the other day, you know, cause everybody talks about burnout, that very real phenomenon where you just, you've worked too hard and you just can't anymore and something snaps and that, and, you know, and I was like, this is just tangentially related to that, but it got me thinking about myself and how this like hobby that I have, which is computers, but it's my career too, right? Like, it's a little awkward for some of us where it's like, we almost do computers like too much. Cause it's like,
right.
I love it. And it's my career and it's my business and it's my hobby and all blah, blah, blah. Anyway,
my wife is very empathetic and understands this. Not at all. So
it's just satisfying on so many levels. And I've tried to even like dig into why that is in a way, but it's like, it's satisfying in a way that art can be satisfying for some people because you're like creating something, you know, it's like your canvas in a way. And it's this game. It's like, if I make this little tweak, then maybe my revenue will go up. So there's like some business satisfaction that can come from it. And there's just this nerdy, like left brain satisfaction to like solving an algorithm or a function or something. And so all that stuff in a big pot of satisfaction, it's like computers can just be so satisfying. It's great. Anyway, also all your, you know, the physical requirements for it aren't that much. I mean, it's good to have a back that isn't freaking killing you. So sure. But like, there's a lot of, you can do it. You can use your computer from a hotel or a hospital bed a lot of times, you know, like you can, I can be really, really sad one day and still be very productive on my computer. I could be very, very happy one day and be good on my computer. I broke my arms and didn't really have that bad of a off time from my computer because just the way they broke it. But if I broke my legs, then I really wouldn't have. I'd probably be more productive because I broke my legs. I mean, so it's like, you know, that's why I relate this to burnout, is that you can be in a really wide array of mental states and physical states and have it not really impact your computering ability. Except for this moment where it tips the balance a little too far and you're like, oh my God, like my brain doesn't work because the pain threshold has crossed this line where I even if I can work a little bit, I can't work for very long and I can't do very hard tasks because my brain just feels clouded from all the pain, you know? So there's like a line in which that stops being true, but it's otherwise kind of amazing how much we can continue computering.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's that like computers are very emancipating, like gives you a bunch of freedom and ability. And even from an accessibility standpoint, I mean, a lot of people depend on their devices to get around, you know, and like it's a super humanizing tool, right? Like, what is it? What's the Steve Jobs quote about the bicycle? Like a computer is a bicycle or whatever.
For your mind, right? Because wasn't it about like there's it's incredible how little energy some animals can use to move, right? Like the condor or something is otherwise the top animal because of how little energy it needs to get really far. But then like, you know, most animals, they don't really use tools. I mean, I'm sure there's some like monkey that sticks a stick in an ant hole and gets some ants and eats it. And thus the stick is a tool. But humans like really use the heck out of tools, obviously.
Yeah.
And so
we build a catapult
or we build a computer, dang it, you know? And so that condor equation of how efficient they are at moving is out the window when you factor in even just a bicycle, and then all of a sudden human beings' energy output for movement is much further than even the condor. So bicycle for your mind.
It's cool, but it, you know, it can also, what it's kind of like a prison too, right? Like, I mean, like you have a freaking cold, like green snots coming out your nose, you know, and you're like, well, I'm just going to lay in bed and power through some emails or whatever.
Yeah,
like, exactly. I'm just going to like clean out the inbox on my iPad. Like, and it's just like, well, that stinks. Like, why do we, anyway, we can't just be sick anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I'm terrible at that. I can't even walk down the stairs without swiping a few emails. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And so it's not like it, whatever it like. It, so it, it's this beautiful, like, emancipator. Like I was thinking, like, you know, like I can, like, if I have Slack on my phone, I can mostly do like whatever, a lot of my job, like just by like, and I can go to the coffee shop or whatever, like is Slack's on my phone. But then having Slack on your phone is so annoying and stress inducing, like, you know, at the same time. So like, what do you, you know, so it's like a both and thing, you know?
Yeah. But this will evolve over time. I mean, I think we've watched it evolve with, you know, built in tooling to warn you about things and measure things like that. And you know, the answer isn't as simple as just leave your phone at home or uninstall stuff from your phone. Like, those are early answers to these questions, but there's probably more like a dial that you can turn where it's like, I don't necessarily want to leave my phone at home, but I want to, I don't know, set some expectations of myself and others of when I am away. That's just a bit more complicated.
Yeah, well, or it's like that, like, you get the light phone, right? Do you use a light phone? Break away from technology, freedom, right? Okay, I'm doing that. I love that until somebody texts me a picture of my kid or a video, you know, and it's like, oh, I wish I had that smartphone again, or I needed a map, you know, like, oh, I don't have a map. So now that whatever, the paper phone doesn't work anymore. So
yeah,
all that stuff is cool. And there needs to be a way to break from technology. But I just, I don't know what I,
This episode is brought to you by CloudBees Rollout. CloudBees Rollout is where developers come to ship changes at will. CloudBees Rollout allows you to manage feature flags at scale so that you're empowered to continuously and intelligently roll out changes as soon as they are code complete on any platform, even mobile. You can decouple development from code releases for real-time change control, roll back only the changes you want. CloudBees Rollout also allows you to deploy features to different segments of your user base, segment by any property or attribute, and create static and dynamic segments. You can also use multivariate flags for A/B testing and nix misbehaving features with a kill switch. You can check out the 14-day free trial and experience how CloudBees Rollout can help you rock every release. Follow the link in your podcast player right now or visit rollout.io for your 14-day free trial. Our thanks to CloudBees Rollout for sponsoring this episode of the podcast.
I have some notes here about, like, about other things related to this. This is a decent segue the, just because lately, and this happens to me, you know, I think things come and go in waves, but once in a while, like, you're just, like, start to feel overwhelmed with, like, technology things that just, that break and that ultimately you feel helpless about. Like, even you and me, who've been around computers for a long time, have a decent degree of confidence and skill in fixing technology problems. You know, that's what I do all day long. So if a problem comes along, I can probably fix
it. You must fix it.
Yeah.
When a problem comes along, you can probably fix it.
of a wide variety of stuff, too. That's why we are enlisted to, you know, fix our parents' email and stuff like that, because it's just, we've had a lifetime of experience doing that. So it's interesting when problems come along that they happen and they still have the power to make you feel helpless. You're like, I don't know, you know, or that you're mentally just not ready for it. Or it's like, it's Thursday, I have things to do. I can't, this feels like an all day or an all weeker for me to dig into. Like, I just, and you just feel deflated.
Yeah, there's nothing worse. I've had that with computer problems, you know, or I know a lot of friends who have the MacBook, and there's a new MacBook coming out. So for $5,000, you can fix this problem, but their keyboards keep going out or whatever. And then it's just like, I just need to work. Like, but my S key stopped working for the third time. Like, what do I do? You know what I mean? Like, and when you are like helpless to fix the problem or like powerless, there's nothing, and you don't, and I feel this with my back too. I mean, same sort of deal. When you're helpless to fix the problem or somewhat helpless, and like the pathway to getting better or fixing the problem is not clear, that is just destroying. It is a destroying feeling.
It is. And it's a special kind of helplessness now, because it's not like, oh my, I lost my key for something, and so, you know, I just have to wait until like Sue from DevOps
comes
gets
over
in,
and then unlocks the building. Yeah,
that's a kind of a version of helplessness, but it's like it has a clear path forward. It has an answer. There's just something right. that can happen. But sometimes you're like, this is something that you're the only gatekeeper of, and nobody's going to come along and help you, and it's broken. And so, it's just they've been piling up for me. I mean, a rapid fire, I'll do them. Like, I upgraded my plugin in WordPress for my forums. It's called BB Press to 2.6. Big release, been years in the making. Ran some database queries because it needed to make them. And then my forums are just white on CSS Tricks. I don't have a boss on CSS Tricks. I don't have anybody to help me with that. So all I can kind of do is, like, peruse some forums, you know, think about rolling back, but like not, you know, super duper sure how to do that, especially because it had a big database migration in it. So this is if I'm going to roll back, it's a big rollback. It's a, you know, probably ask my hosts for some help and find a backup that's not too old, but don't only replace those, you know, only replace the right tables, not the content tables and comments tables. It's just a big complicated thing. And I'm just like, it feels helpless to me because I can probably rope some people in. I can probably get through this, but it's like, why, you know?
Yeah. Now you have a remodeling project now. You have to,
the toilet started
shooting water up. And so you have to fix it. So. That's
yeah, I lose a remote control for a TV, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buy one of these fancy remotes. Why not? You know, that way I can control all my stuff, and I'm not like searching to replace the exact remote that I lost. I'm going to get a fancy remote, and I get it, and it downloads an app on my phone, and the app sucks on the phone. It's just clearly poorly designed. You know, this is a Logitech Harmony remote, and
I had this one.
I've had these before over time, and they all suck, you know, at least for me. And even the the base technology of it still sucks. It's like you have these little tiny things, little IR things that have a really long cord attached to them that you're supposed to mount to a plant or something in the back of your room, and that behaves as your remote. You're like, I want a remote so it doesn't have a wire. Oh, my God. Anyway, so that aside, it does work for some stuff like Apple TV and stuff where it's supposed to. And so you set up all your devices and you set up your actions and all this stuff on the app now. Okay, that makes sense. That's a little better than it used to be, having to do it on this tiny screen on the remote itself. And then it has to sync to the remote. Well, the syncing process just doesn't work. It goes 1%, 2%, 10%, 12%. And mine, it gets up to 58%. And I've done this like six times now, and it just dies at 58%. So the entire remote is useless. I can't reset it. I've tried 100 times to do it. Anyway, that's not as bad, because I can take this remote and throw it in the junk or return it to Amazon, which is what I'm actually going to do. So, but it's still like this helplessness thing. Like, my God, why can't technology just work? I get this new iPhone. So I buy a 2018 Chevy Tahoe, because this is our brand new fancy car for the family. We got it after Ruby was born.
Family van. All right.
Yeah. Or I think we got the 17 instead of the 18, because there's very little differences. But one of the things in the 18 was that a charging pad for your phone that works, you know?
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. I want the charging pad. But the 2017 didn't have it. But we still went for the 17 because it's like significantly cheaper or whatever. But then had them install the 18 charging pad in it. It was a little pricey, but we did it. And it's so nice, you know? Okay. We got the charging pad thing in there now, and then I get the new iPhone and it doesn't work with the charging pad anymore, so I got like 8 months
Gripes
of usage
almighty.
Of it.
Gripes almighty.
Come on. Okay, so yo. Now I'm working on a new series for CSS Tricks. Dave, you're gonna be a part of it. It's gonna be great. We're gonna write some stuff, and you know, so I'm like working on CSS Tricks and getting, you know, like just creating some templates, writing some CSS, you know, getting this thing going. And I have a gulp process for CSS Tricks, and it's worked fine for a long time. I migrated to it. I can't remember why exactly. You know, for a long time, when I'm working by myself, I just use CodeKit or something to process my crap. But gulp could do a whole suite of things, and I'm pretty comfortable with gulp processes anyway. And I'm working on it. But lately, it started to do this weird thing where, so I have all these steps when it processes my CSS, it like runs sass and then it runs auto prefixer and then it minifies it and then it moves it over here and then it cleans up after itself and blah, blah, blah. There's a bunch of steps and it's starting to do like race condition stuff. Have you ever seen this where
like
it moves stuff to a folder too late, like, and then the cleanup doesn't get it?
Yeah. So it's like, compile my, sass or whatever, or like, and then format my CSS or something, and then like, or like format my SAS, and then it'll be like, oh, I detected a change, so I'm going to compile, and then I'm going to come back, and then I'm going to do this. Yeah, there's, or like, especially in a watch task or whatever, it's like, it gets
right.
Really,
I have a watch task, right? For sure too. So anyway, I build this thing in Gulp 3, right? Because there's Gulp 4, which I think is widely regarded as like a much better improvement to Gulp Land, kind of modernized mm-hmm. a ton of stuff. But there's this funny thing where they've decided to like bundle the CLI with, that's what Gulp Global is the CLI, where it used to be Gulp and CLI separately or something like that. But the CLI at one point like was 3.9 something. But for some reason, now the modern version of the CLI is 2.something. So it's like a backwards movement in the CLI version or something. But you're supposed to install that globally. You know, like you're supposed, that's,
yeah.
Gulp is a local thing you NPM install or Yarn install or whatever. And, but the Gulp CLI stuff is global. So you can just use it wherever. Fine. You know, I don't even care. Like these days, I'm so used to just doing like Yarn run Gulp something, something anyway to keep it local, but who cares? So, I cannot get the frickin' CLI to downgrade from 3.something to 2.something, and with it in that state, it won't run Gulp 4. So I'm like, because I'm trying to solve this race condition problem, I'm throwing the kitchen sink at it, Dave. I'm trying to restructure my tasks and use different sequential task runners and, you know, use
RMRF node modules, like root node.
I've done a million things to try to fix this problem, and I just can't get it. It's one of these helplessness things where I don't have a boss I can call. I can't even really Stack Overflow this thing with my own question because it's so specific to my busted ass setup. You've read like 15 tutorials on how to do this and nobody's covered your specific thing, you're kind of like, you're lost, man. You're in the mm-hmm. woods. You're just like, I don't know what to do. So I only put all these things together, not just to whine, because I'll ultimately solve all these things somehow, some way through getting help and stuff. But even us, you know, or even me anyway, I get myself into tech situations where I still just feel totally helpless. Like,
I mean, my yesterday, you want to know my yesterday? Prettier plus Stylint plus ESLint. Like, oh, buddy, like that was my whole day. Like, just like, how does this, like, who's doing what? Like, you install like some, you know, VS Code plugin, the Prettier plug, you have to install the plugin to get the on format on save to work, right? And then you have to install the like node module in your project to get it to register that it can actually format on save. And then you'd get into Stylint, and then there's all the rules, like where you can save the rules and stuff like that. But you don't even actually want to write your own rules. You want to just use the recommended rules, or like you want to start there and override. And boy, howdy, I just went through, I think like I got it all working to, you know, it's like, I want to save a SAS file that is chunked up, just bad, like just poorly formatted and have it fix. Right. But I think I'm finally at the place where it will do it, but now it's like, okay, how do I roll this out to my team? Right. Like how do I say like, okay, everybody, I think I got a situation where, you know, rather, cause I don't like the linting errors on deploy, you know, like, or like it is helpful, you know, like when you commit or whatever, like a pre-commit or post-commit hook, that's awesome. But like, I really want it like while I'm authoring, I just want it to fix. Right. And so, but there's just, you know, I have like three Visual Studio Code plugins that are all kind of working together, but you know, which ones do I actually need? I think I just need the Prettier going, you know? And so like, what's the minimum viable clean up the code?
Is that, did you actually get it? Cause I think Stylist can do format on save, but that, I would think that's in lieu of Prettier then. Like you can't get both of them to do their job, can you? That would be impossible.
I think you can. Like Prettier is like for, I'm going to indent things and put mm-hmm. the brackets in the right place or something. Right. And Stylint is like, okay, I want a space before every media query. I want like a space after the, you know, like the colon in your property key value. You know, I want a space or whatever after the media queries, you know, every media query property or whatever. So I think it's good. And then like you can do other things like no importance or whatever. Like you can enforce like kind of more stricter rules. That I think that's what it allows, which is probably handy in like, you know, more advanced situations, you know, or more like what would you say? Like more like it's probably handy in like big teams where like you need more strict code enforcement and stuff like that. So, but it's like,
I use it, I just have it do the squigglies for me, style lint, because I found it conflicted with Prettier and having two different things auto formatting.
But that's it. I think I have it going, but now it's like, okay, let me turn off all my plugins and make sure, you know what I mean? Like, and then I have like a JSON package.json, right? Like, and I can, what's funny is I can run like style lint dash s fix in a npm script, right? So I go whatever, fix css, so npm run fix css, and that works fine. But if I run like style lint from the command line, it's like, style lint's not installed, and I'm like, what?
That's like, exactly what I'm talking about with gulp. Like, I almost, these days, I don't even trust the CLIs anymore. I always do yarn run thing, you know, so it's running in the scope of your project or whatever. And then it's like, if you get these working anyway, it's like, hopefully everybody on your team uses VS Code. But on ours, I think we do. But like, I want to be a little bit more future proof than that. So I'd prefer to keep all of these things as pre-commit hooks with Husky so that, you know, just because it works great in VS Code for you, you hit save and it formats stuff. It should also do that. From the command line, from your commit.
Uses Coda or whatever.
Yeah, because I just don't want us to be like, oh, I opened up this file and I moved a couple of imports around and I indented a few things and I, you know, put a couple of spaces over here and that's a commit, you know? Just cleaning up, you know, you're like, no. I don't want any white space or code formatting choices to be commits. And I do that because I do that. Like, my brain gets all distracted. I open up a file and I'm like, let me just clean up in here first and then I'll get to work, you know?
Well, and I'm such like a, it's like, I don't know. I'm feeling four spaces today. Like, you know, like I just, I'm like, whatever. Like, I just, this is what I feel like today. So I'm going to do that. But like, it just doesn't, you know, I'm like, for this project in particular, I'm just like, okay, I just want it to all be the same and like have like a, like we can override rules, but like that's like intentional choices, you know, like, but then I get mad at like, thankfully my JSON is all formatting now, like automatically, like Prettier swipes out the blast trailing commas and stuff like that. But like, man, you like, you write a JSON wrong and the whole thing just breaks and you're just like, goodness, dude, like this is just, I think I'm realizing, and this will be in my little CSS tricks post if that's not already out, but it's just like this configuration stuff is not my favorite at all. It's like the opposite of favorite. So
turns out Rails was right.
Rails was right, man. Rails is like, just type Rails server in your command line and everything will just pretty much work. And we'll bundle some performance practices in there. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, we were like, that's terrible. This isn't good. We need to rewrite everything in JavaScript. God's language.
What was that? I mean, if you had to guess, you know, so you can point at, you know, let's say it's 2014 or whatever, rolling into 2015, 16. JavaScript is exploding at this time, but it's still early days. Like, you know, nothing compared to how it is now with JavaScript totally taken over. What was it? I have some guesses, I think, but is it, can you just be like, I don't know, like people, like some libraries existed and people really liked those libraries. So it was the explosion of the library, or was it the capability of browsers, or is it the capability of networks, or like, what is it?
I think there's like going to be three things. Like Rails has a footprint, right? Like it has, you know, it had a lot of bad press, like scaling issues, like Twitter couldn't scale with Rails, therefore it's bad, you know? And it was like, well, it's, you know, Twitter's a little bit of an edge case, like, you know, that's like millions of people like hitting the same like server at once, but then like also like real time updates and all, like a lot of stuff is going on with Twitter, and it's like micro. So it's like, but then, so it got a bad rap for like can't scale. I think like setting up Ruby on somebody else's computer was still very difficult.
Yeah.
And I mean, even now it's like Jekyll or 11D. It's like, I'm going to just say 11D, cause like you download the node binary and type npm install 11D and you're done or whatever. Like you're up and running. Or you can even run it off of npx 11D or whatever, and like start compiling a blog without even installing 11D. So I think that's a difference. But then, you know, I think stuff like Socket.io was really compelling technology, like threading or very concurrent connections and stuff like that. I think Node had an advantage on that just because of its kind of style. Like it was designed to be like highly concurrent, I think, you know, and I think somebody pointed out, like, you know, Elixir is sort of a spinoff of Rails, like Phoenix Elixir sort of stuff. I think a lot of Rubyists then moved to other things as well, because they sort of started hitting the limitations of Ruby as a language and started peeling off. But like, that's all to say, like, you can still build a very good site with Ruby and Rails, and it's really great and really wonderful to work in. Like, that's not really that's not most people's problem, right? Like, mm-hmm. like it's, but like, I think some people will feel like they hit a wall at some point, or couldn't solve something or something, or the gem doesn't exist or whatever. So,
but what about this, you know, this, like, what happened in JavaScript land that made us move away from server stuff to asking more of the client, you know, just doing everything on the client side? Like, is there a particular feature you could point to that?
Well, on the client side, you had what? Like, so we had, everyone had a jQuery app. It's still like 86% of the web is jQuery or something like that.
Yeah, even back then we were doing that, right? It wasn't like we were just using Rails for everything. Like, we were already JavaScriptizing our apps. We were just having trouble with it, right?
And, you know, there was like, was it jQuery barbecue or whatever? The like history push state library. Do you remember?
Oh yeah, sure.
$.barbecue like or something.
Strongly desiring some like routing capabilities or Ajax-y SPA capabilities.
But then Backbone hit and Knockout were around. And somebody recently did a really cool like visualization of all these logos showing up on a timeline. Right. And I know a lot of people went all in on Backbone, and then they kind of hit the limits of that and were like, oh, this is rough. And then React came out, and, you know, React or Angular, I guess, would have been first, you know, and Angular is like enterprise baby. And everyone's like, all the enterprise people are like, yes, baby, I want to be that. Because, you know, if you're like, oh, Google makes things with this, oh, I could probably make a thing with this, like some sort of real-time reactive to data, you know, the data updates, my thing updates, Firebase, oh, this is amazing. You know, React comes out, it's mm-hmm. really, you know, it has a really cool component model. I remember like 2014 conversations where, you know, I'm in a client, you know, and we're just sitting around, we're like, do you see that React thing? And they're like, oh, yeah. It's like, I mean, is that something we should look at? And we're like, you know, and, you know, I had like my whatever apprehensions about all JavaScript. Like, I think we should do progressive enhancement or whatever. But this is before like render to string. But like, you know, but even then it was like a very compelling component model, you know. And so like, oh, you write the components and those components tie together. So which was better than.
So it was real time capabilities. It had URL handling capabilities and a component model that.
I think so. I mean, I think and that goes back to the like Socket.io and the concurrency stuff too on mm-hmm. the server. Like I think you had that, and then the like real time and the component model stuff that started coming
out. It just didn't look good in jQuery. You can open a WebSocket in a jQuery app too, but then the data comes in, and then you what? Run a jQuery selector to find the thing in the DOM that you want to change and manually update it. It's like, that's fine, but it's starting to get freaking sloppy.
Yeah, it'd be like $ document on listen or whatever on whatever pub sub or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, so it just wasn't like, I guess, expressive. Is that the right term? Like for coding, like it the reactive model wasn't there in jQuery. And I think we do need a reactive model. So, you know, you need a little, I think our understanding of UI and state also improved. Like, you need a little bit of state, you know, like components do.
And so I think people waited around for Rails to do this, and I think they have some kind of answers for it. But I think it's not too little too late, and that Rails still does a bunch of useful stuff to you. But don't you see more and more people being like, well, I'm just going to use React anyway, but I can still use really nice stuff on the back end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doesn't mean I can't use Rails.
No. Yeah. I mean, and I think like your talk or whatever is like, I guess we're all full stack developers now or whatever. You know, I think it really highlights like as these things move to the client, our relationship with the server has changed. So now like if you are like, oh, I'll do templating on the client, not on the server. It's like now you need, you're demanding less of your server, you know, like you're like, well, I don't need it to do that. Oh, GraphQL. Oh, I'll like just write my database queries on the client, whatever. And then like your server's like, oh, okay, I guess I don't do that anymore. Like, and so now you're like, oh, okay, all you do server is like fetch data and munge data. And like, I bet I could do that in a serverless function, you know, like a half dozen serverless functions. And so now that only run on demand. So, you know, like this whole thing snowballs forward, I think our relationship with the server is changing. And so I'm even thinking about that with an app I'm building. It's just like, how much of this could be serverless? Cause like I want a form on this page that saves some data somewhere, like, but I don't want to run a Rails app or anything. So I'll probably just try some serverless functions and see if it works and see if it saves things. And so, and then I just need to get the data. So,
hey, this episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by WooCommerce. WooCommerce is e-commerce for your WordPress site. And so it's a plugin. So if you have a self-hosted WordPress site like Shop Talk Show is, or CSS Tricks is, or the blog at CodePen is, or whatever, you can install WooCommerce there, and then you have a full-featured store ready to go. And it's kind of built for people who build websites, I think, is a way to think of it. It's pretty easy to get started with. I find it tremendously easy, but it's not meant to be like the absolute easiest, hand-holdiest way ever to do e-commerce. It's meant to be flexible and designable and extendable and stuff. And I found that to be highly true. Like, you can take really strong design control over this site or be pretty hands-off with what you want. But it integrates with lots of stuff. And that's helped me over the years tremendously. Like, oh, okay, I got to get these orders, but they got to go into ShipStation because X, Y, and Z company needs to deal with ShipStation on their end. Fine, it's a plugin. It works great. Or, you know, we need to take money through Stripe or some other thing. You know, there's a plugin for that. Everything is plugin. There's a zillion plugins for it, and it's great in that way. Now, that's for your self-hosted WordPress sites, but WooCommerce is an automatic company. And automatic is WordPress.com, right? So WordPress.com, which is like the hosted version of WordPress, like you don't have to deal with hosting or security or any of that stuff. It's great. I have site on it as well. You know, you can start a store on WordPress.com, and it's like really woven in there. So if you start a store, you don't even really see the WooCommerce bits, but it is WooCommerce under the hood. So that's cool. You can do all your e-commerce on WordPress.com and kind of know that it's WooCommerce powered if you care. So that's cool. And extend it still through WooCommerce add-ons. Or this is interesting too, and you might not have known this, but on WordPress.com, if you have a business plan, you can just install third-party plugins too on your WordPress.com site. It feels like weird almost to some people, but you can totally do that, including WooCommerce. So if you just want to like use WooCommerce that you already know from some other experience, you can totally just do that as well right on WordPress.com. So that's cool. WooCommerce, totally good e-commerce software for WordPress. Check it out. Bye-bye. God, I think this is fascinating. As I'm, you know, obviously I've been thinking about this stuff a lot. Like, what happened to this client side, and why the pushback recently? And is there really any pushback, or like, what's? I don't know, there's a million things to think about. But hey, I got an email in my inbox here. That's pretty interesting.
We got money? Did we get the coil money? did we get it?
No, I haven't heard from them. They're still like, I don't know, dotting T's and crossing eyes or whatever they say.
Okay.
We'll see. Okay. It doesn't feel, to be perfectly honest, it feels like, are you really doing this anymore? Like, this long of radio silence always feels weird for me. And who knows? Maybe we'll just get an email that does something. I'm specifically talking about the grant that was a part of all this. Gatsby must have hired a PR firm or whatever. In fact, I know they did because they got an email and they're like, do you want to hear about our secret stuff? And I'm like, I don't sign NDAs. I just don't care that much. You know, I'm not like a real journalist or whatever. But then they're like, well, we'll tell you when the embargo gets lifted anyway. Okay, cool. But apparently it was just lifted. Gatsby, the fastest growing website development platform, beloved by developers, used by thousands of companies around the world, like IBM, Nike, PayPal, and Harry's. Is that the shaving thing?
The razor?
Yeah,
the razor. Man.
Right up there with IBM, Nike, and PayPal. Has launched its first commercial platform, Gatsby Cloud. With an expanding suite of new tools that dramatically improve workflows, developers, and content creators. So it includes Gatsby Preview, which they already sell. That was a pro feature from not long ago. And the other thing that's comboed with it is called Gatsby Builds, the fastest way to build a Gatsby site. Tailored to Gatsby applications, Builds provides all the automation and infrastructure you need for instant, continuous deployment. And then it does like Lighthouse checks and stuff too. But it's not, it doesn't say it's like hosting though. Cause that was the, you know, when we had Jason, I was trying to, has since left Gatsby, I think. He's at Netlify too now, right? Oh, well, that's a weird transition. Cause I was trying to drill him. I'm like, dude, come on. Like, when are you guys going to go to war with Netlify here or what? You know? And it sounds like this is maybe step one for that. It doesn't say the word Netlify anything on here, but it does say push to deploy with GitHub.
It looks like a sort of Netlify competitor for Gatsby only.
But you can't host it. So it's still pushing the hosting part to somebody else. So I assume you can use this with Netlify too. But I assume it's no mistake that Netlify is not mentioned here.
So it's kind of like one click, set up your website. It gets you a GitHub and it.
I guess it's totally unclear. Fast build times, builds every branch automatically. That's Netlify-esque. Show and share previews of deploys. That's very Netlify-esque. But like, where? Are they just temporary? Are they immutable? Are they
Gatsby Cloud, man. Gatsby Cloud.
Yeah, but then you can't use it for production? Like, what's the deal?
I wonder if it's like a white label Netlify. That would be cool. But
I'm sure these answers will become clear in days to come, and so we'll sound like dummies by the time you're listening to this. But whatever, that's sure. That was 2 seconds after reading the
Well, it's interesting how, I think we talked about it a long time ago, like this $15 million investment into Gatsby, which is, you know, very, like, for better or for worse, it's a very, like, it is chosen Gatsby plus GraphQL plus, like, Webpack, basically, as its product, right? That's its product. And, you know what, or I guess, sorry, React plus GraphQL plus Webpack, you know, so it's sort of at its core, it's just those three things, but now they're building like hosting on top of that. Like it's interesting to see like investment kind of come into this static site market, this Jamstack market, like big investment. That's a lot of investment to build these tiny clouds, you know?
There's coin thrown around. That's for sure.
And then there's like, maybe it's like organization or whatever, but like, why does 11D not have the investment? You know, I know we joked around that I invested $16 million, just one more than Gatsby, but like, why, what is the difference between Gatsby and 11D that 11D would not have somebody knocking on the door to give him.
I think it's somewhat clear. Like, Zach wears everything he does. Zach's got his heart on his sleeve, as they say. Like, Zach's not cooking up any secret crap behind the scenes that is some big power play in the world of websites, you know? Zach's just like, I'm going to make a really cool SSG. Here you go, world. I'm going to open source the crap out of it and tell you every single thought on my mind kind of thing. Yeah. If Zach wanted $15 million, he'd have to have some secret crap he was working on that was going to be like 11D Cloud that is some, it's an online editor for SSGs. It's faster than anyone out there. You'd have to start speaking the speak of VC fanciness and have secret stuff up his sleeve that he's out there pitching and stuff. You know, I just don't think he lives that life right now. That's just a guess, but
yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, like, yeah, I guess there's probably location factors into it some too, right? Like, it's like, you know, and even probably your client list or something like that. Like, you just have enough demand from Airbnb, like, hey, can you help us do this? Or, hey, can you help us? You know, like, so I don't know. It's just interesting how the world works. So, or like, what, Dev2 got a bunch of investment, right? The like developer blog forums. So, you know, it's like, how come that happens? I don't know. I don't understand it. So,
yeah,
but I will gladly take anyone's money. So if you just watch. All right.
So how far did we get here? We're getting there. So, you know, we started speaking, you know, like a little bit about like, oh, there's these moments in tech where no matter who you are, you can feel totally helpless with mm-hmm. the things that go wrong. And then it's, you know, on the flip side, it's kind of fun to think about things in tech that just work, that are like kind of astounding in their effectiveness. You know, like even on the show, I had opened up our little Trello board because we get some questions in. Maybe we'll do a question here. Next time, I promise we'll do tons of questions.
This one is question.
I hooked up Zapier and Trello 100 years ago. We have a WooFoo form. The WooFoo form submits and it emails us for the questions. Just so if it's something like, we should probably change this at some point to be like, contact Chris and Dave or submit a question. But we only have one form on the website. But we really are going to redo the website, by the way. Stay tuned. Anyway, the sometimes ask a question ends up being like, hey, dummies, you have a typo on this thing or whatever. So we want to get that over email so we can fix it, right? But mostly they're questions for the show itself that come in. And so the WooFoo form then goes to Zapier, which makes a Trello card of it and puts it in Trello. I set that up 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It has never broken ever. There's never been I've never touched it ever since then. That's awesome. That's how tech should work.
Yeah. No, I mean, if anything, it's gotten better, right? I remember this one time we were getting a bunch of spam through our contact form there, but that seemed like FIFA, buy FIFA coins or whatever. So, but I think that's all done, right? So
I wonder what
we don't.
I tend to not get that much spam through WooFoo, so I don't know what that was about. I don't even remember it.
You know, it's not on this like tech amazingness. Not like y'all all know I switched to Windows like 4 or 5 years ago or whatever. Like, there's still things with Windows like that probably people are like, oh, I don't want to do this. You know, I know DHH recently switched to Windows and he's like, the type is terrible. I can't do this or whatever. And I don't have that problem. But like, but one thing about Windows, I feel like Windows keeps getting better, and I feel like that's kind of cool, and that's hard for a big company like Microsoft or whatever. But like my experience on Windows has been like, oh, this is just like, this is great. It just keeps like, I get new things and everything's getting better. And, you know, there's some hiccups here and there, but, you know, I'm on the cusp of getting WSL2 on my big machine here, and that's going to be a big improvement. So, like, in some ways, that's cool. I'm glad that's happening. So, thankful. So
when I tweeted about my forum problem, you know, and then I got this, like, you know, I literally cannot say the word WordPress without somebody being like, you should switch your entire CMS. It's almost a joke at some point that I always get them. And they don't tweet me back as a joke because I don't talk about
it. Have you tried Hugo? Like,
just, yeah. Sounds great. Love it. Let me just switch it over. And I've written about why I'm not going. I don't intend to switch. I mean, that's not forever. I'm just saying, like, if we think of tech that works pretty well, I'm going on 15 years here of having a WordPress site with that long of powering everything I do is pretty low in its technical debt problems for me. So just saying, you know, high five to things that just work really well for a long time. You know, WordPress has, it seems to me, these pretty hard, like, we're not going to deprecate old functions and stuff. I think there's some crazy folklore where they never have. They might give you warnings and stuff, but they just don't break old stuff, even if that means that the code base evolves more slowly, or it's frustrating to some people or something like that. But it's a little bit how the web itself works. The web itself takes that stuff even more seriously than this open source project does. You know, projects all the time. You know, who was really writing about this recently that was great, and how frameworks you can just, it doesn't matter. They can just, you know, they can have hard upgrade requirements. You know, there's versioning and you don't have to use the new version if you don't want to, but you have to use.
Jen Simmons was saying that with about the web. She was saying like,
yeah,
the web doesn't get a V2, you know?
Right. You can't just opt into an old version of the web. So they have to take that super, super seriously. And they do, and they tend to do a great job at it, because anytime where they slip up just the tiniest little bit, it's kind of a disaster. You know, chances are they have to roll forward and fix it for more backwards compatibility.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, speaking of, web keeps getting better. I've seen, like, I don't know if you follow the blogs. The Chrome Dev Summit just happened.
What was new? I haven't even read a roundup post yet.
You know, I'm slowly getting my information here as I go. But there's a good talk from Yuna Kravitz. Is that? I feel like that's her last name, but now I'm like second guessing myself. But Argyle Inc. They were on there talking about, like, they did a speed run of like 20 CSS features.
Yeah, that's great.
In like 30 minutes. So it's like, if I were to recommend one thing to Shop Talk listeners, it would probably be that.
Was it surprising, or would we know them already?
I think you'd know them already, but then
it's, you still know, a cool presentation. I'm just guessing. I just want to know if there's something I haven't seen yet. Is there any surprises?
Well, no. Yes and no. I mean, so like, you know, I think it's hard to like describe, but are you with like the block and the inline sizing? Have you kind of caught up on that story? Like
the two value syntax.
Yeah. The two value syntax. So like even like you're like margin, whatever, block inside or whatever, like, or something like block start or whatever, like that would be margin left in RTL and in block whatever end or whatever would be LTR, like I said that backwards, but anyway, it's confusing because it's hard to explain with mouth coding, but it is kind of like a next iteration of sort of how we program the box model and deal with boxes and internationalization. It's like a huge leap forward. I don't know how it's going to work, you know, like CSS wise or like preprocessor wise, we'll probably need a whole new set of tools to do all that. So, for browsers that can't do it, but it's all that stuff is going to be really cool.
I'm a big fan. Like it's like when CSS evolves to just be better later. We can't use it right now. There might not even be extremely distinct advantages to using it now, but as we go on, we just change how we teach CSS. So it's just better. Like there'll be a day, I don't know, let's say 5 years from now, where even Bootcamp kids, or whoever, they don't have to be kids, are not learning margin left, they're learning margin block start, because that's just the right thing to do, to learn, because it just works better when you change stuff around on the page. And then we want to, in 5 years from now, we don't have to worry about the browser support of it, it'll just work. Same thing with the two value display syntax. It's just a better mental model. It doesn't actually unlock any special new abilities. In fact, I tried to dig through there to see if there's anything that it did that we can't do now. And it's like, not really. No.
Well, and I was trying to figure out like what could I do with it? I really don't even know yet. But or if it could like eliminate a div, you know, like when you do like flex and then you like say the child is also a flex so that it can grow or whatever, like, does it fix that? I don't really know. So, I'd be curious how it all works but maybe it's to support like have a flex item inside of a grid item. Like it can be both of those things, you know, different directions, I guess. So I don't know. So, there was a talk from, Snugug, Sam Richard,
Was it Houdini? About,
you know, he's talked a lot about Houdini. There's Houdini stuff in the Yuna talk. But he talks about Fugu stuff, which is Google's kind of big effort to bridge the gap between native and web. And so he like built like a markdown editor that saves to your file system locally. So it's, you know, it's not out. You can't really do it as origin trials or whatever, but like, it's this idea like, oh, you want to write to the operating system. We're going to give you an API to do that. So like rather than, if you do like Visual Studio Code, it kind of does that, you know, like, but I'm sure there's some sort of like intense operation that happens. This would be like direct writes to the file system sort of thing. So, so yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And then, you know, things like portals is all kind of being talked about.
Didn't we get that last year? That was confusing to me. I'm like, why are we talking about portals again? Like,
I think we got it this summer, but I think it's kind of coming along. Like, I think it was
in the messaging. I saw a big slide that was like, portals don't animate, but you can animate them if you want to. It's just an iframe that you promote, right? But during that, by promote, I mean, let's say there's you have a big page that's 1,000 pixels wide and you have an iframe in it that's 300 pixels wide. Imagine that iframe like animating up to take over the whole page, and then it's not an iframe anymore. It gets promoted to be the active URL of the page. It's super cool because it means SPA, like there's only one reason it exists at all. Like, you don't really need it for performance reasons, because you can always do prefetching and stuff like that if that's what you're trying to do. So there's only one reason it exists, and it's because now we can do SPA-like work without jQuery barbecue.
No, because you just think of like an iOS animation where you like slide a pane over from the right, you know, as you like drill down, like, and that has a great UX and great mental models. So I think that's happening.
The big use case is the shopping cart for your e-commerce site. Like, as soon as you like scroll your mouse up there towards the shopping cart, at that point you should be like, ooh, let me preload that portal quick. Now I have it. Mm-hmm. Now if they actually click there, I can like promote the shopping cart to the new page without refreshing the page, and it'll look super fast because it's been loading while that's been happening. It's a great idea, but I wonder what the pushback has been, or what the adoption is going to be like, or what, because is it a really progressive enhancement friendly thing? I would hope so, but maybe not. I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing Firefox is going to jump on, but I could be wrong.
Well, and what's it do for like the page? I mean, we're already with single page apps, right? Like, just murdering the main thread, but now it's like, oh, we're gonna keep two pages in memory on the same page. like does that just destroy apps? I don't know. So there are a lot of talks too about like getting things off the main thread and performance, like Addy and Surma were talking about that stuff, kind of classic Chrome developer talks. So anyway, it's good. It was good. So I really like the Chrome DevRel team. I know that's a contentious opinion, unpopular opinion, but I think they're great, and they
got a lot
really hard at the
big
web.
Big name, but smart people. Is this Edge collaboration stuff for real? Like, is Edge starting to? Did they have all? They didn't fire anybody when they gave up on their own browser. Did everybody get a new job there? And it's collaborating with Chromium.
You want the tea? You want the tea here?
Yeah. What's the deal? Was it
so pre Edge? Like a couple summers ago, a lot of people on the Edge team, at least I know, like two or three or whatever, moved over to the sales. Went over to Salesforce. So like there was a little bit of attrition happening, and I think it was all kind of around this move, like a restructuring, like, oh, we're not gonna like make the browser anymore, then what am I doing or whatever. So but I think I think there's a Greg Whitworth and Stubbornella do a talk at the Chrome Dev Summit, and it's all about like the sort of collaboration state. You know, Edge is like landed like 1600 commits in Chrome, you know, and those are like around security and accessibility and things like that. So like, it is making Chrome a better browser, and hopefully more performance stuff and stuff like that. But I also think one thing that Greg Whitworth's been working on is fixing inputs, and they like updated all the styling of inputs, and that's like going to be a key factor for the next iteration, which is like now giving developers the ability to style your inputs however you want, and drop downs, and you know the like select drop down, like you can program that with CSS. So I think they're coming up with ways to do that. So
that's nice.
Yeah, no, I think it'd be really cool.
Like anything where with Greg and Nicole is like, oh, that's so great, but it's like that's two people, you know, like what are all the rest of you doing?
Yeah, what's everyone else? Well, I'm sure there's people behind them helping and
yeah,
things like that. But you know, there's on the flip side, not to, you know, when I hear things like, oh, we had to call in Bloomberg to like do right grid, you know, then I'm like, wait a minute, what's everyone doing? like grid is an outside thing. Like what's going on? So anyway, well, I guess we'll see, but how this all shakes down, but it is anyway, interesting time in browser lane.
Okay, Dave, fun times.
Let's wrap it up. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcast of choice. Be sure to start our favorite up, find out jobs. You like jobs, get a job. In Twitter at Chop Talk Show. Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
ChopTalkShow.com.